Welcome to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph, as she explores the ever-changing music industry with today's top creatives, artists, and executives. Enjoy these fun and informative conversations with a little bit of love thrown in along the way.
Welcome to For Love and Music with me, Tara Joseph. Today's guest is such an incredible talent and has been performing and composing since the age of 3, no less. As a world-renowned classical and jazz pianist, an internationally acclaimed composer and a singer-songwriter with a string of incredible awards to her name, there really isn't much this guest can't do. So let's welcome to the show the fantastic Emily Bear. Emily, hi, how are you?
So good, how are you?
I'm really well. It's so lovely to have you on the show.
I'm so excited to be here. When you contacted me, I immediately went and listened to a bunch of your podcasts and was so inspired by everyone you had on. So super excited to be here.
Oh, good. Well, it's an honor. So I've been lucky enough to know you since you were, I think, around 12. And I've met your family and they're all wonderful. And, you know, what I'm really interested to start chatting about is the fact that obviously you had this incredible talent from the age of 3. How did your journey sort of go from there? Tell us a little about how it all happened, because I'm sure the listeners would just love to know.
Yeah, so I started playing when I was really young, and we always had pianos in the house because my mom was a voice teacher and also a pianist, but an incredible singer. And I used to like waddle up to the piano and start messing around and creating these little songs. And my parents were like, what else are we going to do with this baby who wants to play music is put her in classical piano lessons. So I started classical piano lessons when I was 4. And then a few months later, I discovered the world of jazz, which like really opened up my eyes. I love classical music and it's a huge inspiration to everything that I do now. And I wouldn't be where I am now without all of my classical training. But I knew that I never really wanted to be a classical concert pianist. And I always wanted to create. So when I discovered the world of jazz, that opened up those doors a little bit more because there's a little bit more room to create playing jazz. So I sort of grew up doing both things and sort of musically bilingual, if you would say. And then when I was around 8 or 9, I discovered writing for orchestras and the world of film scoring. So then I would go to New York every month and I'd spend the first half of the day at Juilliard studying classical piano, jazz piano, and composition. And then I'd head over to NYU and that's where I would study film scoring and how to write the picture and how to use logic and samples and plugins and that whole side of things. And that's when I immediately sort of fell in love with telling stories through music.
Thank you for sharing that with us. I think it's really interesting to hear and learn about your journey. So what was it about the world of jazz that at such a young age drew you in, do you think?
Of course, this is like a huge generalization of classical music, but I mean, in classical music, you have to play what's on the page. And you can put your own interpretation into it, of course, but I feel like with classical music, you have like 25 crayons, and with jazz, there's just so many more options. You just have a lot more freedom, which I thought was really inspiring at a young age. I have so much inspiration from classical music and orchestral music.
So when you're 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, and you're called a prodigy, how does that sit with you at that age? Are you even aware that you're special, or is it just something that's so inherently built within you that you're just sort of getting on with it? Because obviously you have this title until you sort of are no longer a child. So how did that feel, or didn't it feel anything because it was just what you were? Does that make sense?
No, yeah. I never really loved being called a prodigy. And I think that's because there's a lot of stereotypes that come with being called a prodigy. But also, I always wanted my music to be good because it was good music, not because it was amazing that I was doing this when I was 5. You know what I mean? I didn't want someone to be like, oh, wow, that's incredible for a 6-year-old. Oh, wow, that's good music. This is good music. But I always knew that I loved music. And of course, I had a lot of attention at a very young age. But I don't know. I didn't feel like it was any different than another kid who was really good at soccer and started playing when they were really young, or someone who's an incredible artist when they're young. It's like my art form was music, and that was basically it.
And you won a composing award at 6, didn't you? The Morton Gould Young Composer Award, is that right?
Yeah, it's like this ASCAP award that they give out every year. And I won it for this piece that I wrote when I was 6 called Northern Lights. And I don't know if the listeners are going to know this, but there is a series of books called the Magic Treehouse books. And they had a book on the Northern Lights. And after I read it, I was like, oh my God, Mom, what is this? I need to see it. So she brought me to YouTube and showed me a video. And I was so inspired by the Northern Lights and the colors dancing everywhere I read the song. So
when you were at that age writing music, were you writing it as sheet music or were you composing it on the piano as you did it?
I was composing it on the piano. And sometimes my mom would sit next to me with like a staff paper and try to write down what I was playing. But most of the time we had a little tape recorder next to the piano, actually, that we recorded stuff on.
I mean, it's just incredible the journey that you've been on and sort of the journey that you've been on sort of in front of the public, really, in the public eye. And now that you're an adult and you've sort of branched out into being a successful composer, do you sort of look back on all you achieved then and sort of feel that it shaped you to be the person that you are today?
Yeah, of course. I feel like all the influence that I had growing up doing music, whether it was the classical piano training or touring with my jazz trio with Quincy or writing for orchestra from like a young age, I feel like I can take all of those influences and shape it into what I do today, which honestly makes it super fun because there's so many things to pull from.
I remember I saw you, you must have been about 12, I think, with your jazz trio in New York.
Oh my God, with Quincy.
No, he wasn't there. It was a different venue and it was really special. And it was just so inspiring to see someone so young with all of this passion for what they were doing. Really, really inspiring.
People ask me all the time if I still enjoy it, if I still want to do music. And of course, there's going to be days where it's hard and there's tears in the world, but that's in any field that you want to be successful in, right? Like if I wanted to be a doctor, there's going to be those tears and sweat and hours poured into it. But I'd rather be doing that with something that I absolutely can't live without. And I always find that when I'm the most sad, all I want to do is write music. When I'm the most happy, all I want to do is write music. So that's like the bottom line for me.
Which part of what you do you enjoy most? Because obviously you've performed, you know, world-renowned concert halls like Carnegie Hall, the Hollywood Bowl. You've become a successful pop artist, singer-songwriter. You compose for different feature films. You did Nancy Drew in The Hidden Staircase. I mean, there's such a huge array of gifts, talents that you have. Which do you love doing best?
So I feel like this answer changes different. So if I'm playing with a jazz trio and I'm like jamming and having the time of my life, I'm like, oh my God, this is why I do music. But then I hear my music being played by an orchestra and I'm like, oh my God, no, this is why I do music. Or I'll hear like a song that I wrote like in a movie for the first time. I'm like, oh no. This is why I do music. It's honestly all of it. It's so hard for me to choose one because each thing has its own magic moment. I don't know.
Well, as we've all been living during lockdown, I presume that sort of like the composing and the songwriting has taken a bit of a sort of step forward rather than the live, obviously, which no artist can do right now.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm sure most creatives felt this way, but when the lockdown first started, I feel like just the vibe everywhere was scary and no one knew what was happening. And it kind of halted creativity for a little bit. But once we sort of got used to it, I really started getting back into the swing of things. And like, I've written more in this quarantine than I ever have in my entire life. And it's been honestly amazing. I
can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
And what sort of things have you been writing? Have you been writing for films or for your own pop repertoire? What have you been writing, or is it top secret?
So a bunch of things. There's a few I'm really excited about that can't really talk about yet, but those are more on the scoring side. there's been doing artist stuff for my side of the things, which is like more jazzy pop, which has been super fun. And then writing about ex-boyfriends, of course, that's that. And then I'm actually writing a musical with my writing partner, Abigail Barlow. And
oh, wow.
We've been doing that for like the past 8 months, pretty much, but really dove into it because what better time? And
absolutely.
I've always absolutely loved musical theater. I grew up watching and listening to it all the time. And I've always wanted to get into that world. And this idea sort of just fell into my lap. And I'm super, super excited and passionate about it. So that's been really fun.
And is this something that we're going to see you star in as well? Because obviously you've got a gorgeous voice.
Honestly, who knows?
Okay.
I'm not exactly writing for myself in mind, but you never know.
You never know.
The beginning of the process.
Okay.
The great thing about quarantine is that you just have so much time. And so I've been able to work on things that I said I never had time to work on and practice new instruments and work on skills that I needed to work on and just time to write just to write, which might be the best part of everything, is because it brings it down to why we all started this is just to make music.
It's interesting, actually, because we were speaking earlier today and I was mentioning that I'd been chatting to some other composers over the past few weeks for the podcast for Love and Music. And I've asked everyone, how have you found forced isolation rather than chosen isolation? And it sounds for you that forced isolation has worked out rather well.
Yeah, because I'm usually bouncing all over the place, playing shows and traveling a lot. And this is the first time since I moved to LA that I've really just been able to stay in one place for a long time. For me, that's been really great. And I've loved being able to make music every day and spend hours like working on this craft. And it's been awesome.
So earlier when we were chatting in this For Love and Music, you mentioned a very famous name. You mentioned Quincy. And to the world listening, Emily is talking about the extraordinary talent that is Quincy Jones. So fill the listeners in on the incredible working relationship that you have with Quincy and how that began, because that's just, gosh, not everyone gets to have Quincy Jones as their mentor, do they?
I met him when I was 8 and we immediately connected on all things music. And he quickly became like a huge mentor and influence in my life. And one of my biggest role models, because he is everything I want to be. He did everything. He scored movies. He did big band. He did everything. There really hasn't been someone who's quite like him. And his humbleness and his absolute love for music is so inspiring to me. And it's been incredible having him guide me and be there for me basically since I was really young for over 10 years, which is crazy to me.
And do you stay in regular contact? Do you, for example, send him some of your music to get his thoughts on, or do you just play it for him when you get together?
Both. Over the years, I either play it for him in person or I send him music and he gives me feedback, or we talk on the phone. Obviously, I haven't seen him in a little bit because of quarantine, but we actually just talked on the phone a couple of weeks ago and he seems to be doing well, which is good.
Oh, good, good. Well, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about is obviously in recent years, you've been sort of branching out into sort of pop and being a singer-songwriter. And obviously I've seen some of your music videos that are great and I love the music. How are you finding being a singer as well as a instrumental performer? I remember actually, just before you answer, again, when you were younger, hearing you sang, you know that song Hosier? Take me to the church. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that. Whenever I hear that song, I think of you.
Really?
Yeah, whenever I hear that song.
I used to be absolutely terrified of singing in front of people, like mortified. I couldn't do it. And I remember being in a piano store with you and it took so much guts to like mumble this song, Take Me to Church.
Well, it stuck with me and now you're very successful at doing it. So tell us about that process. I want to know.
Yeah. So basically when I was 15, I had done, you know, orchestral in the film stuff, but everyone used to ask me like, oh, do you write pop songs? And I didn't, but I was like, oh, I kind of want to try. So I called up a really, really close friend of mine. Her name's Alana DeFonseca, who writes a ton of songs for TV and film. We wrote a song together, and it's really funny. I was like 15 at this point, and our first song was called Bitch, You're Not My Friend.
Okay.
Because I was filling her in on my middle school, high school drama. And so we wrote this song for this girl who is kind of a bitch. And she had me sing it. And I was absolutely terrified. But I think it was a little bit easier in a recording booth. I felt a little more isolated. So I got through it. But when I started playing for people, they were like, oh, who's singing? And I'm like, it's me. And I'm like, oh. So then I started songwriting more. And the more I did it, the more I sort of fell in love with that whole world, because I had been an instrumentalist my entire life. And so adding the voice and the words. So the more I started songwriting, the more I sort of fell in love with it. And I had been an instrumentalist my entire life. So adding the voice and the words opened up a whole new world for me. And the more I sang and demoed in studios, the more I sort of got used to singing in front of people. And I just got over it. And then I met this songwriter. His name is Toby Gad, years ago. And we started writing together. And we wrote this EP of music. And I released this last year, plus a couple other songs. And it was the first time that I had really put my voice into the world. And it was pretty surreal, because one, I never thought that I would ever be a singer. And actually doing it was really, really fun. And playing those shows with my band and being able to sing and finally communicate these words and lyrics, which I feel like using words and lyrics is just an easy access to people. Of course, when you're doing instrumental music, you can make people feel all sorts of things. But with words and voice, it reaches a new level. And so playing these shows and singing was amazing. And I loved every second of it. But my main love is writing for film and TV. And I do feel like that can cross over with the songwriting, because of course there's tons of songs in TV and film.
So when you're writing for a TV show or a film, what's the process? Are you sent the script? Are you sent a log line? Do you see the visual? Talk us through how the process works for you, because that's really interesting to people that don't know.
Well, I think it depends on the project, because some things are just a song being placed in a movie, or some things are more score-based. And so, like for this thing that I'm actually writing for Pitch right now, I got a brief on the type of music they wanted. It's for a documentary, and they asked me to send a reel, so I sent a reel of music that could fit sort of the brief, and then they came back saying that they loved what I sent. They had used my music to temp some of the film, and they are like, oh, but we're missing this style of music. Could you send out a few things in this style? And I didn't really have anything that style, so right now I'm writing a bunch of things to send to them. But other times, I just pitched for this other movie that wanted a very specific sound. It was like classically inspired, piano-driven, restrained but emotional. And I wrote this 4.5-minute suite of music that fit their brief exactly. And other times, it's more for like a song. So this TV show that I was working on, it was more song-based, not score-based. So they have the brief and the amount of time that you need to make the song, what they want it to be about, and different references, and then I write.
Seriously, it's just such a gift to be able to do what you do. I mean, do you sit there thinking, gosh, I'd love to work with X director, or I've just watched a show on Netflix and I'd love to get involved with that production team? Are there certain teams or people that you would absolutely love to work with?
I think there's definitely different shows or things or documentaries that I watch, and I'm just like in awe of the creativity and the storytelling and how the music dances with the film. And there's different people that I would absolutely die to work with. And there's this guy who I actually just met yesterday over Zoom, who I'm really excited about, because I think he's like one of the most talented documentarians that I've ever seen. And possibly being able to work with him is like so inspiring to me. When you're writing for film and TV, you're not serving the music, you're serving the picture and the stories that the picture is telling. So being able to work in tandem with someone that you like really, really love and respect would be a dream.
What do you see for the future for Emily Bear? Where would you like to be in like 5 years, 10 years?
First and foremost, I want to be a composer. And I've always said that everything I do in music is telling stories. And so film scoring and being a composer has always been my dream. So to be respected in that field would be like the ultimate thing. And then close behind that is the artist Emily Bear, which is another love of mine. I mean, nothing can really compare to performing and like feeling with an audience and seeing their live reactions to your music and seeing how you can affect people with your emotion. That's also incredible. So being able to cross those over would be the ultimate dream. And then also sing the main title. That sort of thing would be like in my head.
So like a Bond movie, write the score and sing the title.
Oh God, I wish.
We've put it out there now. Because anything I feel for you is possible.
Next James Bond movie, let's go.
Let's go. Right?
Yeah. That would be absolutely the dream.
Now, obviously, I mentioned at the very beginning of the chat today that you've got a really wonderful family and you've got an older brother and older sister. You're the youngest.
Yes.
And you're all very talented in different ways. And you've got a wonderful mother and father, and you've clearly had a lot of support over the years, emotional support, because I think that makes a big difference. I think when you're starting so young, and sometimes people don't have the backbone of a family like you have had. So tell us a little bit about your family, if you're happy to, and how they might have sort of inspired you over the years to, again, help you be the woman that you are today.
No, yeah, I think that my family has been the biggest thing in my life. They've supported me in every way possible, but mostly have just been there to guide me and help me. And they've definitely instilled very strong morals and values in me, which is probably the biggest thing I'm thankful for. And my family is priceless to me. I love them. And the fact that they're so far away makes us even closer a little bit.
Where are your family? Tell us where they are.
My sister's in Boston. She's a junior at Boston University. My brother was in San Francisco working as a software engineer, but he just moved to Park City to enjoy the mountains while he's working from home. And then both my parents and the love of my life, Eddie, our dog, in in Rockford, Illinois.
Although you've got another love of your life with you sitting by your side right now, don't you?
I have this 12-pound fluffy 14-year-old dog sitting right next to me.
We can't not give him a shout out.
My God, no. He's the best studio dog, the cutest thing ever. I love him. I've never had a studio dog before. He just listens to the music and lays next to me all day. It's so great.
At least it's not heavy metal.
Actually, what I'm writing right now is rock.
Is it? Oh, God. Okay. Well, there you go. He's going to be an all-rounded, like, sort of music aficionado.
Good puppy. Not a puppy.
Your mom has such amazing energy and joie de vivre and so much respect for her. She's really, really incredible woman. So
they've done so much for me.
Yeah.
I can never repay them. My mom's been, when I was young, she was always traveling with me.
Yeah.
So we've been through a lot together.
Yeah, absolutely. And more to come, I'm sure.
Yes, I hope so. As soon as we can travel again.
Yeah, exactly. So for people listening out there, for youngsters who might be listening, who might sort of want to get into composing, songwriting, et cetera, what advice would you give, considering you have so much experience from such a young age?
Yeah, I find that the biggest thing that turns people off from the music industry is being frustrated, because it's obviously a very tough industry and you get so many no's. And that can be really, really hard for someone to go through. I mean, I've been through it and sometimes I struggle with it, as I'm sure every other music in this industry, they've received so many no's, but it's just that one yes that counts.
I think most artists get the majority of no's before they get that one yes, right?
I also talk to a lot of other composers and established colleagues, and pick their brain about their experience and how they started and where they've come from and where they are now. And most people that I've talked to, they've been through this. It's been the years of the grind, the years of the nose, the years of like just pitching and pitching and pitching and writing for nothing. And then finally, you're just at the right place at the right time. And my mom used to always say that luck is when opportunity meets preparation. So you may get the opportunity, but if you're not prepared, it's not going to go through. So don't get frustrated. Keep going, keep working, keep hustling. And soon you're going to be at the right place at the right time, and it'll be great.
And you got to do a lot of work, right? You got to work hard.
I'm going through all the no's now too. And every other composer is too. For every gig that you see someone get, there's like 30 no's. And I also feel like one thing that I've learned over the past couple of years is how important relationships and networking is in this industry. And it's like when you're a composer or an artist, you're like the CEO of your own company. You are your own company, and it's an everyday thing. It's not like, oh, I don't feel like doing it today, so I'm not going to do it today. Like, you have to do it every day. Oh, just to do another quote. I remember when I was six.
You've got a good memory, I have to tell you. I don't remember anything when I was six.
I have certain memories. But my piano teacher, Juilliard, used to tell me that your work will show. I can tell when you've practiced and I can tell when you've not practiced. So like the work you put in now will pay off later. And although procrastination is a beautiful thing, and it's also hard to like push yourself sometimes, but you just have to do it.
What do you do on the odd day that you decide to take a day off?
I think breaks are very important, especially when you're writing music. Sometimes it's just not going to come out. And I feel like you need to be in a good headspace to create something. But I don't know. I feel like every once in a while, the same with people who work non-industry jobs, you need to break every once in a while and get more inspiration and get excited about working again.
So what do you do? What do you do when you're not?
I started going to the beach in LA, which is funny because I had lived here for over 2 years and I had never been to the beach until quarantine hit.
Wow. Okay.
Started taking advantage of like all the little places near LA, like Manhattan Beach and Santa Barbara and Ojai. I always find that that makes me feel a certain type of way and spend a day outside. Love being outside.
I'm so glad that you're settled in LA, that life is going so incredibly well for you, much deserved. I mean, literally, you have worked incredibly hard since the age of three. So I'm sure that over the next years to come, you're going to have all the success that you dream of having. And it's just been a real joy to chat to you and to hear about your growth as a artist, as a performer, a person, and just, I'm just really happy for you. So thank you for coming on to For Love and Music. It's been a joy
having me, and sorry for all my rambles, but it's been really, really fun. For everyone listening, Tara is an incredible human being. I've known her, as she said, since I've been young.
Oh, thanks.
Seriously, the utmost respect for everything you do and how you do it. So.
Oh, thank you, Emily. Oh, that's rough. I'm gonna cry. Thank you. Well, listen, thank you again. Thank you to all of our fabulous For Love and Music listeners. Stay safe and healthy, everyone, and you'll be hearing from me again soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph. For more information, you can check out at For Love and Music Official on Instagram, at For Love and Music Official on Facebook, and also visit www.jamartistgroup.com/podcast.